Welcome to The Grill Room. On the menu this week, all the latest news, views, and opinions from the world of professional golf. Your maitre d's are Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli, two friends who rarely agree on anything. You can count on them to give you both sides of the story, whether you want it or not. So come on in, have a seat, and remember, anything that comes from The Grill Room is definitely on our tab. The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses. And remember, keep your applause to a mild clap, all right? After all, we're talking golf here.
Well, a Thanksgiving holidays are in the books, and The Grill Room is back open. I want to begin by saying I certainly hope each and every one of our Grill Room family members had a very happy Thanksgiving, get to spend some time with your family, and now it's time to talk a little golf. You can't talk a little golf without the man himself. Let's bring in Alex Maselli. Alex, I trust you had a great Thanksgiving.
I did. I like Thanksgiving a lot, like maybe because there's no presents and there's only food.
Well, you know, that's a valid point. The presence issue, I can see it now. It gets to be a bit much. Everybody's worried that what they're buying for somebody is not going to be enough, and I don't want to buy something that somebody else is giving them. That's why Thanksgiving, as you accurately pointed out, is probably better, because you get together, you have all the festivities, but you don't have to worry about the presents.
Well, and I think, I think that's generally it. We actually, because of the way I think all of us handle the holidays, the Christmas or whatever, you know, your holiday is in December, we've handled it differently because it gets so crazy. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And if you have kids, it's even more ridiculous because you keep buying them stuff and they actually, in some ways, don't really get the focus of what it's all about. So, yeah, Thanksgiving makes it a lot easier. I like Thanksgiving a lot.
You know, if you look at real young children, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, I mean, they open up one present, they say, oh, wow, and then they throw it aside and they're ready to open up the next present. It's something's been lost in translation. We hope that doesn't occur as we talk about what happened in the world of golf. Truthfully, not a lot happening last week. But we'll delve into it. And when we come back, it'll be Around the World of Golf. And you're listening to The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses. Equipment for a visual advantage, powered by GolfWeek.com. Oh, yes. And we're heard on TuneIn.
You're listening to The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
The outside light and weather change. Your sunglasses should too. Transitions Adaptive Sunglass Lenses change their level of darkness depending on the light outside to enhance your vision during golf and other outdoor activities. Partnered with Callaway, Oakley, and Nike, Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses increase contrast, improve distance and depth perception, and reduce distracting glare so you can see the game you love even better. Visit transitions.com/sunwear to learn more and buy a pair today.
The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
As promised, we're back. He's Alex, I'm Bob. Time now for Around the World of Golf. Very little going on in the world of golf, Alex. So what do? We take a trip down under.
You'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me. Well, down came the jumbo.
Really, an amazing story in that Australian Open. Just incredible. Not only with the player that won, but the score he shot on Sunday just blew me away.
Well, you know, it's always hard, Bob, to really get a feel for what's going on the golf course when you're watching it on television. You're not there with the weather, the temperature, or if it's windy or not. You don't see if he's wind gusts or any of those things, so it's very difficult. But you have to measure what a player does against what the other people did the same day. And by that measure, there's no question that Jordan Spieth was certainly on fire compared to everybody else in the field on Sunday.
You know what? Jordan Spieth, interesting study, has only that one victory that came in 2013 at the John Deere Classic. Obviously played very well at the President's Cup, made the Ryder Cup team, lots of expectations, went into a head-to-head battle with Bubba Watson at the Masters, was right there with nine holes to go, and then, you know, he fell away from the lead. But now I think he's maturing every week. He shoots 63 on Sunday. That's the round you were alluded to. And it becomes the first American to win that Australian Open since Brad Faxon did it. And that was back in 1993. And you say, oh, well, Australian Open. Yeah, but listen to some of the names that were in there. Rory McIlroy, Adam Scott, Jeff Ogilvy, Boo Weekly, John Sendin, Robert Allenby, and many others. It really was a quality field.
Right. I mean, it was. It was a quality field, first of all. I think, second of all, the fact that you mentioned it, Brad Faxon was the last American to do it in 1993, which is the same year that Jordan Spieth was born. So I mean, it just gives you an idea of how long it's been. And then you get these intangible parts where, I mean, the guy just, he always was just moving forward, never giving anybody a chance on Sunday. I mean, when, you know, he's 3-under for the day, he goes to 4-under, he goes to 5-under, he's not bogeying, he's not doing anything crazy, he's letting everybody else behind him try to figure a way to finish second, which is really impressive, probably the most impressive, not only tournament for Jordan Spieth and his win, but probably the most impressive round he's ever played as a professional, because he did everything he needed to do, and he seemed to do it effortlessly throughout the entire Sunday. And yet, you take a look at somebody like Rory McIlroy, who had a chance to tweet about Jordan Spieth afterwards and saying basically that you could have given me 100 rounds today, and I never would have even thought about shooting 63. It just gives you an idea how good Jordan Spieth played on Sunday. Now the question is, and I've said this before, what does he do with this? I mean, when he won John Deere, he played okay the rest of the year, but didn't do anything great. Now, what does he do with this? He comes back to the United States. He's playing in Orlando at the Hero World Challenge Tigers event. I'm sure he's going to be a little tired. I'm sure it's going to be a little difficult. But that's not the one I care about. What I care about is what does he do in February and March, and then going into the Masters in April. That's what I see. How much what he did on Sunday in Australia is going to help him going down the road.
Well said, Alex, but we still have to, really focus a little bit on what you said a minute ago. He was born in 1993. I mean, this kid is a babe in the woods, so to speak, and yet flashes of brilliance. We kind of expect huge things from him, and we don't know whether he has the ability to deliver the goods on the back nine of a major on Sunday. Early indications certainly are going in that direction, but until you get through that window, I mean, just ask Sergio Garcia. I mean, does it mean you're going to win a major or multiple majors?
Well, I think, you know, the first thing that everybody runs into is finding out how to win a golf tournament. So let's take a look back. You had Phil Mickelson, the best players that I can think of over this era. You have Phil Mickelson, who won a golf tournament as an amateur. Didn't have any problems when he came into the professional ranks. You had Tiger Woods, who didn't really play well in professional events when he was an amateur, but it only took him like three events or four events to win in 1996 in the fall series, when it would have been a fall time frame, for him to win his first event and then turn around and win the Tournament of Champions the next year in a playoff. So he was on his way. Then he wins his first major in 1997, and there's no question. So those are the two guys that I can think of. You look at Ernie Els at a young age, won a major when he won the U.S. Open at Congressional. These are guys that have shown that there was promise. They went ahead and grabbed it, and they just kept going from there. And the question is where does Jordan Spieth fall in there? Is he one of those Ernie Els, Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson guys, or is he a Ricky Fowler, Charles Hall guy? And, I mean, there is a differentiation between the two. I mean, both those guys came in with a lot of splash, a lot of polish. Everybody thought that they would be the next great thing. And I'm not trying to demean either of them, but they clearly have not met expectations.
Yeah, but let me say this much, Alex. If we made the statement, forget what Ricky Fowler did last year. If we said Jordan Spieth, before he's 25 years old, is going to finish in the top five in all four majors in 1 year, nobody would believe that he'd be good enough to do that. And if he does do that, now Ricky Fowler is not even getting the credit that he deserves for doing that. You alluded to, somebody like Ricky Fowler. I mean, top five, four majors in a row, you got to be kidding me. I mean, that stuff, that's really unheard of. And back to the age factor, what was Jordan Spieth? 4 years old when Tiger won his first major.
Right, but I think, Bob, what you have to understand is, and I understand, Ricky has said that he's really focusing on majors, but the bottom line is that you have to win golf tournaments. I think it's imperative that you learn how to win golf tournaments. We go all the way back to Michelle Wee. Michelle Wee was a very, very good player. I remember hearing Judy Rankin just a couple weeks ago saying Michelle Wee at 15 was a better player than she was at 17. She was a very, very good player, but the point was that she wasn't winning golf tournaments, and because she wasn't winning golf tournaments, she wasn't getting any better. I mean, when you think about it, in her professional career, she finally wins a major championship at the Women's Open this year at Pinehurst, but she'd been playing professional golf for a long time, and she doesn't have that many wins on her resume. And you really question, what's more important? Is it winning, or is it just getting close to winning? And meaning, in the case you're talking about, getting close to winning in a major. And my point is that we can all talk about the fact that Jack Nicklaus had 19 seconds, but that's not what we focus on. We focus on the fact that how many events he won and how many majors he won. And I don't care if Ricky Fowler is top five in 35 majors. If he doesn't win any of them, it's not going to matter.
You bring up a good point there because as Tiger was, counting them off, major win number 12, 13, and 14, there was a huge amount of discussion on whether he would get to 18 major wins, the record held by Jack Nicklaus. And I remember during that time period saying he may get to 18 or maybe even 19, but the one record he'll never get to is 37 first and second place finishes in a major. I don't think Jack gets nearly the credit he deserves. I mean, 37 times to finish in the top two in a major, man, that's mind-boggling.
Right, but the point is that the number that's more important out of that is the 18, and I think Ricky Fowler, let's just back it up for a second. You take a look at Bubba Watson, who's won two majors, the same one. He's won the Masters. Bubba Watson hasn't even won 10 events yet. But if Bubba Watson wins a third major, meaning if he wins the Masters, or if he would have won that PGA at Whistling Straits, if he wins anything else, another major, and doesn't win 10 events, is there any question in your mind that he is going to be in the Hall of Fame?
Well, with three major victories, you have to be in the Hall of Fame.
Right. My point is that, but he's won them. I mean, if he would have had 25 seconds, that wouldn't have gotten him in the Hall of Fame. I mean, the point is you have to win golf tournaments. And that's the thing that Charles Howell lacks now. That's the thing that Ricky Fowler lacks. Ricky can talk about it, and I'm fine with that. Ricky can talk about the fact that he's focusing on, major championships, which is great because that really is the big kahuna. No matter what everybody wants to say, major championships are what we all talk about, what we all focus on. I mean, Rory McIlroy is only thinking right now about Augusta National. He'll play other tournaments, but he's thinking only about Augusta National. And so that's what it's all about, and I agree with all that. But the bottom line is at some point, you can't talk about your top fives or your top twos or your top threes. You got to win them. That's the only way you separate yourself from the others, and that's why it'll be interesting to see what Jordan Spieth can do. Can he separate himself in a way that makes him one of the guys we talked about, the Tiger Woods, the Phil Mickelsons, the Ernie Els, and et cetera, or does he go the other way, a guy we talked about but really never got to the level we thought he'd get to?
Alex, let me ask you this about Rory McIlroy. There's been some comments, both pro and con. It's obvious Rory McIlroy is making it very clear that he's already focused on April and the Masters and going down Magnolia Lane and completing the Grand Slam. One camp is saying he shouldn't be doing that. You know, he's focusing way too early on the Masters. The other camp is saying, no, he's addressing it head on. He knows what kind of story it's going to be once the calendar year flips to 2015 and we start going each day closer to that first major of the year and what Rory McIlroy could accomplish. Which camp are you in?
Well, I'm in the camp of whatever Rory McIlroy thinks is best for Rory McIlroy. I mean, if it was his first major win, he's going for his first major win, then maybe you'd question it, because you really question when somebody articulates something they want to do. A lot of people have said that's not good. I mean, if you ask Tiger or ask Phil, they're not telling you how they're focused on the Masters or they're not focused on the U.S. Open weeks or months before. That being said, they actually are. Some of them, in Phil Mickelson's case, he goes to the venue usually weeks before the U.S. Open. Clearly, he's focused on the U.S. Open, even though he might go to that venue on the Monday and turn around and show up at a pro-am or Tuesday or Wednesday at a tour event. So I think what's ever best for Rory McIlroy, and really, I guess at this point, who are we to question what he believes is best for him? His success level has been amazing, and I think that if there was ever a question about Rory McIlroy and his abilities, they certainly should be on the shelf now, because he has shown he's got the ability to do so much in the game of golf. And he's the one guy since Tiger has come out that you could really say has shown somewhat Tiger-esque qualities on the golf course.
Let me ask you this. You know, I kind of suspect what you might say based on your previous verbiage on the matter. But Tiger Woods at his best, Rory McIlroy at his best, who are you betting on?
Well, I think let's put it this way. If we're talking old equipment, there's no question it was Tiger. If we're talking the now and new, this kind of equipment, I really think it would have to be Rory. And I would say that because I don't think Rory is as good on the greens, but I think there's nobody that I've seen better, with the possible exception of Greg Norman, that could drive the ball with the consistency that Rory McIlroy can. Even Tiger could not drive the ball with the consistency that Rory is.
Rory not only drives it far, but he drives it awfully straight. Speaking of equipment, Mr. Maselli, Jordan Spieth was using that new Titleist ball, the Titleist Pro VX prototype. Same one, Bubba won the HSBC, Charlie Hoffman won the OHB. What kind of skinny you have on this golf ball?
Well, all I know about the ball is it's a little softer to give a little better feel around the greens. You don't lose any distance, but it's just a little softer around the greens, and it's made a difference for some guys in chipping, because, you know, obviously you don't want to lose that length. So that's what I know about the ball. I think we'd be remiss if we go outside the equipment for a section. We'd be remiss in not indicating that, believe it or not, part of the Australian Open process is to actually determine who qualifies for the Open Championship at the Old Course of St. Andrews next year. And outside of those that were already qualified, Rod Pampling, Greg Chalmers, and Brett Rumford qualified for, because of where they finished in the Australian Open, qualified for the Open Championship. It seems a little early, but it's what the process is. So they, along with all those people that already have their spots, which are going to be those guys that are either previous winners or those guys that are in the top 50 in the world, or guys that have won certain other tournaments, other majors, and they still have some time left. So already the field is probably halfway determined, but those three guys are going to get in, and congratulations to them. And I think, Bob, maybe the other place that we haven't talked about, which was kind of interesting, is the PGA Tour China Series. And I find it interesting because they had their tour championship. They determined for that tour championship the five guys that are on the money list to go will get their cards for the web.com. And the winner, Hao Tong Li, who's a Chinese, won the Order of Merit. He's 19 years old. He won twice on tour. And there are some Americans after that. There's Sam Chain and Brett DeWitt of Australia, and I think it's Todd Bake of South Korea. All those guys get their cards. But the guy that's the most interesting to me is Xinjiang Zhang. Xinjiang lost his privilege to play on the PGA Tour China Series after winning three times because of some questions about scorecard irregularity, and was dismissed from the ability to play on that tour by the China Golf Association for 6 months. So here he is on suspension for 6 months, but yet still keeps his position in the Order of Merit, and keeps, and now will receive his card on the Web.com Tour. The question is when will he be able to play on the Web.com Tour? Because the PGA Tour China Series did not suspend him, but the China Golf Association did. And now when he goes to Web.com, if he wanted to play in the first event in Panama, I actually don't know the answer if he can or cannot play. And when I talked to the PGA Tour in China when I was there a couple weeks ago, they could not answer that question either.
Well, it's fascinating to talk about Hao Tung and Xinjiang, but I have to make mention of this amazing guy, Brett DeWitt. He's an American that's from Australia. How did that happen? Or was he somebody you said was from America, then said he was from Australia?
No, he's Australian. Sam Cheen is from U.S. from the U.S. So
That's it. Okay, we got it right.
I got it right.
You got to get your Hao Tungs and your Xinjiangs all in order for us to continue this show. I'll tell you what we're going to do. Why don't we take a break? By the way, the Web.com Tour, well, that begins in late January, Panama Claro Championship, and it's going to be held in Panama City. It'll be the start of the 26th season for that tour. Amazing. You're listening to The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses, equipment for a visual advantage, powered by GolfWeek.com, and certainly we are heard on TuneIn. What's up next when we come back?
The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
Want to improve your golf game? Improve your vision. Callaway and Transitions Optical have created Callaway Neox Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses, designed to enhance visual performance while playing golf. They automatically adjust color and darkness, sharpen depth perception, and offer superior clarity. You'll have more accurate distance vision and be better able to see the terrain and contours all day, regardless of weather and light conditions. Buy Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses at CallawayGolf.com or learn where to get a pair in your prescription at transitions.com/sunwear/Neox.
Sight is one of our most valued senses. Many cherished memories and important life lessons are acquired through sight. Through the Transitions Healthy Sight for Life Fund, we're reaching out in communities around the world to help people understand and protect their healthy sight. Think about what you'd miss seeing if you lost your eyesight tomorrow, and take steps to protect your vision today. See more at HealthySightForLife.org.
The outside light and weather change. Your sunglasses should too. Transitions Adaptive Sunglass Lenses change their level of darkness depending on the light outside to enhance your vision during golf and other outdoor activities. Partnered with Callaway, Oakley, and Nike, Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses increase contrast, improve distance and depth perception, and reduce distracting glare so you can see the game you love even better. Visit transitions.com/sunwear to learn more and buy a pair today.
Welcome back to The Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
What's up next is the section or the segment we're into. It's officially silly season. Although with the amount of money up for grabs, no one is taking it lightly, that's for sure. The first one out of the box, the Hero World Challenge, starts this week. And in addition to a large purse, there's also world ranking points up for grabs, which I completely don't understand. It's a great field, only 18 players, which, again, doesn't make any sense that there'd be world ranking points involved. Zach Johnson is defending. Of course, that defense happened back in California. We're going to be in Orlando this time at Isleworth. Jim Furyk pulled out with a back injury, and 25-ranked player Patrick Reed will take his place. Big news is that Tiger is returning to competition with this event. Is that big news for you, Bob?
It really is big news. And, I shouldn't tell you this, but I am going to. Tiger finally disclosed that Lindsay really helped his rehab, and he is in such unbelievable shape. He thinks he's going to be 30 years old, not 40 years old. So we may be seeing a Tiger that, you know, when he was 30, you couldn't beat him. We hope to see him play that well again. Alex, I got to go back to those world ranking points. Have you ever heard of one justification for that factor? I mean, 18 players and you get world ranking points?
Well, I think the only justification was is that these players wanted to, you know, in Tiger's case or in the Shark Shootout's case or down in South Africa when they have the $1 million challenge, that was one of the ways they could make sure that they would have a strong field if they had world ranking points. So, I mean, really what this means is when you have the number four player in the world, which is the top player playing this week, which is Henrik Stenson, down to number 20, now it looks like number 27, which is Patrick Reed. All this means is the rich get richer. And if I was in the top, you know, 100, I'd be kind of put off by the fact that you'd be getting world ranking points to this field.
The Shark Shootout, you mentioned that. They get world ranking points too?
I think they might, but I might be wrong. But I know the $1 million challenge does. And that's got a smaller field than even this. This doesn't even have 18 players.
As soon as I mentioned that Tiger was extremely fit and ready, Alex got a little nervous and starting to worry already. You don't even have to begin worrying until April, Tiger. Tiger's not going to win a major before April. I can assure you of that.
Well, let me just tell you why we're doing this show. I got a quick email from Nike, actually, about Tiger's equipment changes, and he is going to have the new Vapor Speed prototype driver in the bag.
Wow.
As well as the Vapor Speed Fairway 3 and 5 woods in the bag.
Wow.
The new Vapor Pro blades, and he's going to be using the new RZN black ball. All that is going to be in the bag. I think the ball is the same. The rest of the equipment is new. Quite interesting to see Tiger using new equipment in December. We'll see how good that is. If there's any indication for what, you know, not only what Rory McIlroy's done with this equipment, but others as well, I think that maybe Tiger's going to find that he's going to be pretty happy with this stuff.
New body, new equipment. Here we go, Tiger. Pretty good field playing in his event. The one player that I'm going to focus on, I'm going to be interested in what Billy Horschel does. You know, such unbelievable things occurred for him, Tour Championship winner, FedEx Cup winner, and now it's another year. Is Billy Horschel the real deal, or did he catch lightning in a bottle? We'll start to get part of that answer next week, or I should say this week, in Florida in Tiger's event.
You know, Bob, realistically now, I know you're so in love with Mr. Tiger Woods. So realistically, in your mind, what do you see from him in 2015?
Well, bare minimum, one major.
He's going to play in or he's going to win?
No, he will have number 15 under his belt. The one thing I can't really get clear in my head is after he wins the Masters, does that propel him to win right away at Chambers Bay? Nobody has an advantage at Chambers Bay. Nobody's ever played there. So if Tiger takes his winning form from Augusta National out to Chambers Bay, maybe he can get number 16 out there. But I'm not sure on that. I'm not saying that yet. All I'm saying is number 15, that's as good as being in the bag.
Okay, so just as long as, anybody listening to this, I just want to make sure that they understand that you have a particular bias here. You have been wrong every time since 2008 in regards to your predictions of Tiger winning at least one major, because there wasn't a show where we mentioned his name and major in the same sentence that you didn't indicate that he was going to win one of them upcoming or throughout the year. So four majors in 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. So there's been a lot of majors that you've been wrong on. So I don't want anybody running out to their local bookie and investing their hard-earned money into something that you're saying about Tiger.
Well, it's been well documented that I picked you know, boy, I wish I could remember, Lucas Glover to win a U.S. Open. His odds were 250 to 1. I guarantee you, you can't get 250 to 1 on Tiger Woods next April. So just keep that in mind.
All right, I'll remember that.
All right.
European Tour begins in 2015 season this week with the Nedbank Challenge. Half of the European Ryder Cup team will be there. Thomas Bjorn is defending at age 42. Martin Keimer, Victor Dubuisson, Jamie Donaldson, Stephen Gallagher, and Lee Westwood all making the trip, as well as Spain's Miguel Angel Jimenez, who was the vice captain on the team. He is also in the field, but won't be the captain, I don't believe, of the next Ryder Cup team. Point being is that the European Tour is starting now in South Africa. I know Westwood was tweeting that he's on his way. Pretty interesting field, and it can propel one of these guys into the rest of the year. But it also means that, I think in Westwood's case, I think he's also going to Thailand after this. So a lot of golf travel going on for some of these guys. I would have thought they'd be done and dusted by now.
Well, that's just the way it is in 2014 as we go into 2015. Need your opinion on this. I think this is a critical year for Lee Westwood. You know, if he's ever going to get that major, that sand running pretty fast through that hourglass, might have to get it done this year. And maybe he's been saving it. You know, if you're only going to win one major in your career, what about an Open Championship when it's played at St. Andrews? I mean, that's enough to satisfy anybody.
Well, I think what's interesting about Westwood is he struggled with his driver, and where that was such a club that he relied on so heavily during those runs where he had chances to win majors, he started struggling with that. So we'll see what happens. I think that, you know, he lost a lot of weight, got himself back into shape late part of this year, and so I think he realizes that the hourglass, as you said, is running out of sand. So we'll see. But, you know, I think the hardest thing is for Westwood or for anybody, and, you know, Tiger included, is the fact that there's so many good players now. I mean, he didn't have to worry 6 or 7 years ago about Rory McIlroy. I mean, Adam Scott was a good player, but not a guy that you would have thought you had to worry about for a major. We just talked about Jordan Spieth early on. There's another one. Bubba Watson, you know, not a guy that you're really thinking about. And even though if Bubba only really is an issue at a PGA and a Masters, well, that's two of the four. So there's always somebody that you can look at and say, you know, in a field, if Lee Westwood finishes second, he's always been that guy, that one other guy. And that's the hard part. There's always that one other guy, and he's got to find a way to get past that and to be the guy, and it's hard. There's no question about it. You talked about Sergio Garcia. Obviously, Colin Montgomery spent a lot of his career trying to figure that out as well. So there's a lot of guys that are certainly guys you would think that could win majors or should win majors, but for whatever reason, just can't get it done.
All right. Before we talk about the LPGA Tour, I just want to clarify a point for our listeners. Hourglasses never run out of sand. All you have to do is tip it back over, and it's fully loaded. In the LPGA Tour, their final qualifying school this week at LPGA International Daytona Beach. Some notables in that field, Alex, Birdie Kim, Minjin Lee, a superstar from Australia, Cheyenne Woods, who has had flashes of brilliance, and Madison Pressel, Morgan Pressel's younger sister. That LPGA Tour, I think you'll agree with me, Michael Wan deserves a lot of credit. This past season was absolutely phenomenal as far as the LPGA goes.
Yeah, no, there's no question. It's getting better and better. It's a good product to watch and to follow. You didn't mention Ryan O'Toole or Vicky Hurst. Vicky Hurst, when she came out, there seemed to be no question about her. Another one of those wonderkins that you didn't have any question about. Now she's going back to Q School. Ryan O'Toole played, I believe, on the Solheim Cup, and then Charlie Hall, who was a European LET player, Ladies European Tour player. Very, very good player, has had a lot of success. She is going to be trying to get on the LPGA Tour as well, 2013 European Solheim Cup star. So there's a lot of good players in the field. We'll see what happens. But those are the players to watch. When we come back, we'll be focused on vision, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses. That's next, and remember, you're listening to The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses, equipment for visual advantage, powered by Golf Week, and heard on TuneIn. Please follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf and on Facebook at The Grill Room Golf Show.
You're listening to The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
Sight is one of our most valued senses. Many cherished memories and important life lessons are acquired through sight. Through the Transitions Healthy Sight for Life Fund, we're reaching out in communities around the world to help people understand and protect their healthy sight. Think about what you'd miss seeing if you lost your eyesight tomorrow, and take steps to protect your vision today. See more at healthysightforlife.org.
The light changes, the lens changes. It's as simple as that. Nike and Transitions Optical have collaborated to create a new lens technology that is both responsive to light and specifically engineered to sport performance. Nike Max Transitions Golf Tint Sunglasses will help improve contour recognition on the golf course and increase ball pop. You'll literally see your game in a whole new light. Buy a pair today at Nike.com.
The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
Welcome back to The Grill Room. Our Focus on Vision segment is presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses. This week, we'll hear a conversation Bob had with Dr. Fraser Horn, a Nike color science expert. He talks about the advantages that can be gained by wearing Nike Max Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
Dr. Fraser Horn, who is the Nike color science expert. First off, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. Talk a little bit about why color is so important in the Nike Max Transition sunglasses.
It's fun to talk about something I have a passion for, which is golf and eyes, to tell you the truth, being an eye doctor. The thing with color is that when we test patients' eyes and athletes' eyes, it's black on white. But we know that really when you're out on the course, there's nothing really black or white. So what we've done is every color has a certain wavelength, and the scientists at Nike have basically looked at what colors are important on the golf course, and ends up being that it's certain wavelengths. So through the glasses, we actually are able to enhance certain colors so that certain details really stand out compared to the background. And likewise, certain things that are just kind of visual noise, we can dampen by basically filtering that out. So what we do is through the sunglasses, we design a tint that really enhances those critical colors, which end up being, you know, the color of the grass on the greens. So that way you can pick up those critical details. Also helps to make the ball just kind of pop out. So it's just really made to enhance your time out on the course.
Just listening to you, and we're talking with Dr. Fraser Horn, who is the Nike color science expert. With that ability to adjust the color of these glasses, as you mentioned, if you make the green more vibrant, it's going to be a lot easier to read the breaks.
Yes, that's the goal, because, I mean, you know as well as I do, it's a drive for show, putt for dough. So if we can make it to where the putting, you can see that breaking, see that line, it's huge. So anything we can do to help is what our goal.
Of course, very important is the fact that now you take this color science, and it's in the lenses. You incorporate that into the Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses technology, and then it works in various shades of light. I mean, when you go play 18 holes of golf, it may get cloudy, it may get darker, it may get brighter, and to have adaptive sunwear certainly has to be an advantage.
Oh, yes, Bob. This is totally a win-win for everybody when we get into the Transitions Adaptive technology. You know, many of us will try to play first thing in the morning or in the evening, and or if you're like us in Oregon, it gets cloudy every once in a while. So the ability for us to have lenses that adapt to the varying brightness conditions are huge. And it just makes it so that way you don't have to worry about your sunglasses. You can just worry about your golf game.
And our thanks to Dr. Horn. What he says makes all the sense in the world. And to find out more, please visit transitions.com/sunwear. Next on the menu, and after a short break, Bob and World Golf Foundation CEO Steve Mona take a look back at 2014 in their year-in-review conversation. You're listening to The Grill Room, presented by Transition Adaptive Sunglasses Equipment for Visual Advantage and powered by Golf Week. And also heard on TuneIn. Please follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf and on Facebook at The Grill Room Golf Show.
You're listening to The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
The outside light and weather change. Your sunglasses should too. Transitions Adaptive Sunglass Lenses change their level of darkness depending on the light outside to enhance your vision during golf and other outdoor activities. Partnered with Callaway, Oakley, and Nike, Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses increase contrast, improve distance and depth perception, and reduce distracting glare so you can see the game you love even better. Visit transitions.com/sunwear to learn more and buy a pair today.
The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
Well, it's that time of the year when we kind of look back and see what evolved over 2014, and I don't think we could get a better guest for our Grill Room listeners than Steve Mona, CEO of World Golf Foundation. All right, let's begin with some of the trends from this year, especially along the lines of growth of the game.
Well, from the perspective of growth of the game initiatives, 2014 was a very good year from two perspectives. The first of which is the leaders of the LPGA, the Masters Tournament, the PGA of America, the PGA Tour, and the USGA basically spent the whole year agreeing on which initiatives collectively those organizations are going to focus on going into 2015, and then by extension, which initiatives the entire industry will attempt to support in 2015. And I can explain that in just a minute, but that was one highlight. And then the second is we saw significant progress in 2014 in a number of different initiatives, from the First Tee program to Drive Chip and Putt, to PGA Junior League Golf, to LPGA, USGA Girls Golf. So a very good year from the standpoint of growth of the game initiatives overall.
Let's talk a little bit, Steve, about girls and more women coming into the game. Susie Whaley was just elected Secretary of the PGA of America. If everything stays on schedule, 4 years from now, she'll become the first president of the PGA, the first female president of the PGA of America. And I see that as something that'll be a wonderful avenue to get more girls, more ladies involved in the game.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think from the standpoint of a practical element, such as getting more girls and women into the game, Susie's tenure as an officer of the PGA of America will be great for that. But beyond that, I think the symbolism of what that means for the golf industry is equally as important. And it's no secret that we have, as an industry, been heavily weighted toward males. No question. And so Susie becoming president of an organization such as the PGA of America is going to show this isn't just all for males. And I think that from a symbolism standpoint will be tremendous for the game.
You know, Steve, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up the LPGA with their young stars, and a lot of them being from America also certainly has injected some enthusiasm for this game of golf from the ladies' side.
No question about it. I mean, you look at the year that the LPGA had, it was terrific. And looking into 2015, they're going to be playing more events for more money that they ever have, at least in the recent past. And there'll be more exposure from a network TV perspective with the KPMG Women's PGA Championship. So it's going to be, I think, a red-letter year for women's golf and the LPGA in particular. And let me just make one other point as long as we're talking about women. As you know, golf, and I've said this before, is underrepresented in terms of women who participate in the game versus the percentage of the population overall. And so during the course of 2014, the World Golf Foundation, through its Golf 2020 arm, worked with a task force of about a dozen or so women. And the net result of that is we're going to be creating in early 2015 a website that will serve as the focal point for women and their activity in golf. And essentially that site will then take those individuals to whatever website they need to go to find out more information about participating in the game. So whether it's a junior girl, they might get directed toward LPGA, USGA girls. If it's someone new to the game, they might get directed to Get Golf Ready. If it's someone who's already in the game but wants to get more advanced, they might get directed to the Executive Women's Golf Association. So we're really excited about the implications that that website will have on the growth of women in the game.
Wow, it's just part of the wonderful story of this game of golf. We're honored at the moment to be joined by the CEO of the World Golf Foundation, Steve Mona. And Steve, let me ask you, can you give me maybe the top three or four or five coolest golf stats from the year 2014?
Well, yeah, sure. Let me give you a few. First of all, I'll start back with women and girls. The LPGA, USGA girls program attracted 30,000 girls this year, and it's projected that it'll attract 1,000 in 2015. And then, 50,000 in 2015, and then 60,000 in 2016, and it attracted 40,000, I should say, in 2014. So that was very significant. From the standpoint of the PGA Junior League Golf, there were close to 20,000 young boys and girls that participated in that program. And for those people who aren't familiar with that, that's essentially golf's version of Little League Baseball or Papa Warner Football, and that's proving to be tremendously successful. And then from the perspective of drive, chip, and putt, which basically debuted in 14, although it started in 13, there were 256 qualifying events held throughout the country in 2014. And the finals will be held at Augusta National on the Sunday prior to the Masters, as they were last year. So that program, which is essentially golf's answer to punt, pass, and kick, will prove to be very successful for the golf industry, and is already off to a great start. And then the final one I'll leave you with is the first tee. We don't have the final numbers in, but we're estimating that we'll be close to somewhere in the neighborhood of about 4 million young people reached in 2014 through the first tee, most of that coming through the First Tee National Schools program, which is now in about 7,000 elementary schools across the United States, offering golf as part of the PE curriculum at the elementary school level. So we're very excited about the implications of that on the future growth of the game.
You know, Steve, the thing that gets me excited, youngsters playing football, it's a short shelf life, same with baseball. But when you teach a child or a youngster to play the game of golf, it's something that they can do for a lifetime.
Absolutely. That's one of the tremendous benefits of golf, is the fact that it can be played for a lifetime, as you suggest. And that's why we think it's so important to introduce young people to the game at a time where it's a little easier perhaps to take it up, because they may adapt to it faster and they have more time to get expert at it. And then even if they get into a period of time, much like many of us do who are raising families, where maybe you don't play as much, but you can always come back to it. And then certainly as you get into your later years, both in your career and then later in life, then you can enjoy it perhaps more than you did earlier. So we take a philosophy, what we call cradle to grave, and we'd like to introduce people to the game very early on, and then hopefully they'll play it for a lifetime. And the other piece, too, I think there's two other pieces that are important. Number one are the life skills that golf teaches, and that's obviously intrinsic to the First Tee program. But what we say is not only are these young people learning to become golfers, but they're also learning to become leaders, and I think that's really important to keep in mind, that golf teaches us life lessons, and it essentially builds character, no question about it. And then the other piece that gets often overlooked is the health and wellness benefits of golf, which are substantial and significant, particularly if you are able to walk, and particularly if you can carry your own bag. But even if you can't, even in a golf cart, golf does provide health and wellness benefits. And so that's something that we're very much interested in communicating to people who maybe look at golf as somewhat sedentary when, in fact, it really isn't.
Well, you put a wonderful bow tie on 2014 for us. Steve Mona, CEO of the World Golf Foundation. Steve, a good friend of the show, we appreciate your time, and we're excited about what lies ahead in 2015.
Well, let's thank Steve Mona for taking the time to be part of our Grill Room show, and let our listeners know what's happening outside the world of professional golf. Next up, news and notes. Can't wait for that.
The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
Want to improve your golf game? Improve your vision. Callaway and Transitions Optical have created Callaway Neox Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses, designed to enhance visual performance while playing golf. They automatically adjust color and darkness, sharpen depth perception, and offer superior clarity. You'll have more accurate distance vision and be better able to see the terrain and contours all day, regardless of weather and light conditions. Buy Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses at CallawayGolf.com or learn where to get a pair in your prescription at transitions.com/sunwear/Neox.
Sight is one of our most valued senses. Many cherished memories and important life lessons are acquired through sight. Through the Transitions Healthy Sight for Life Fund, we're reaching out in communities around the world to help people understand and protect their healthy sight. Think about what you'd miss seeing if you lost your eyesight tomorrow, and take steps to protect your vision today. See more at HealthySightForLife.org.
The outside light and weather change. Your sunglasses should too. Transitions Adaptive Sunglass Lenses change their level of darkness depending on the light outside to enhance your vision during golf and other outdoor activities. Partnered with Callaway, Oakley, and Nike, Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses increase contrast, improve distance and depth perception, and reduce distracting glare so you can see the game you love even better. Visit transitions.com/sunwear to learn more and buy a pair today.
Welcome back to the Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
Always love when we get to news and notes, because Alex loves this. Not a lot of earth-shaking news in news and notes this week. A couple of things that we should talk about, though. Long putters seem to be back in the news. Webb Simpson ditched his belly putter. Adam Scott seems to be struggling. Seems like he's going to stay with that anchor putting right up until the deadline. Who else do you think is going to be affected the most by that rule change, which comes about just over a year from now?
Well, Bob, Keegan Bradley used a short putter in China, and I had some discussions with him about that. You know, the guy who really will struggle the most with it should be most likely Tim Clark, because of a physical disability that he has. Carl Peterson has only putted with a long putter for his entire professional career. So those two guys, I think, are going to struggle a little more with it than some of the other guys. But in talking to Clark, he felt comfortable. He's going to work through it. And when he gets ready for it, he will go ahead and make the transition. Adam Scott, you're absolutely right. He has no plans on making any changes to the long putter until he absolutely has to. Clearly, Webb Simpson has shown that he's going to have some time. He's going to have some struggles with the shorter putter. But, you know, it's only the first time around, so I don't really, I kind of discount any of that until we start seeing him use it more and more. And in the case of Keegan Bradley, he felt like he can use the short putter or the long putter. He wasn't really concerned about it. But I think, there's one thing when you can make the switch back and forth and kind of work with it. It's another thing when you don't have a choice and there is no other option. So we'll just see how it goes. But I think you'll see some unusual strokes when January starts in 2016. They may use this same length putter and use it and stroke it a little differently. As long as they don't anchor it, the players would certainly have no problem. So I think it's going to be some time yet before we really get a firm grasp of how this rule change is going to affect these guys.
Well, they have a whole year to work on that. Somebody that didn't have a whole year, I would say, Alex, they were basically running up against the deadline, but now the Olympic course gets its reprieve. A judge ruled in favor of the course, and now it's full bore ahead and hopefully Gil Hance and his team are going to be able to get it ready for that 2016 Olympics down in Rio.
Yeah, you know, last time I talked to Gil Hance, they were moving along quite nicely and feeling very comfortable with what they were doing. I don't think that's going to change now. Obviously, the judge has ruled. The prosecutor can come back and make some other arguments, but I think those arguments now at this point are going to fall on deaf ears. It's time to get this thing done. It's time to move forward. It's time to think about golf and the Olympics on a golf course that was built for the Olympics. So I think everything is going to move along quite nicely. But, you know, it is Rio de Janeiro. It is Brazil. And anything can happen.
Well, there's no argument about the player that was named European Tour Rookie of the Year. That was Brooks Koepka. And it seems ironic that a year ago, or last year, it was his good friend Peter Uihlein. To have two good friends go back-to-back as European Tour Rookies of the Year, pretty fascinating stuff. And this one, I can't believe, Alex, happy birthday to the Merry Mex, Lee Trevino, who has just turned 75. He certainly doesn't act that way.
No, he's a happy guy when you see him. I think he's doing really well and is liking what he does in his retirement. And he's certainly someone that when he talks, you really respect what he has to say. He's got such history, not only in professional golf, but in life. And I think that's the more interesting thing about Lee Trevino. All right, Bobby, that's it for this week. You're listening to The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses Equipment for visual advantage and powered by Golf Week, where you get the inside story every week and heard on TuneIn.
A big thank you to our partners, Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses, and to Golf Week. For Janice Self, Alex Maselli, and myself, Bob Bubka, thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf and on Facebook at The Grill Room Golf Show and on golfweek.com.
Thanks for spending some time in The Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.